Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, I'm the girl.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And this is Nerd Nuptial episode 23.
23 episodes of Nerd Nuptial. We want to thank everyone who downloads, subscribes, and likes, and interacts with us, and does whatever that they do, because we have one of the best audiences around. And so many of you have actually wished me a happy birthday because we talked about it on the show, and a lot of our listeners have asked us how medieval times went.
Oh, really? Yes. It was awesome.
It was freaking awesome. Maybe with a hella at the beginning. Because Dave Ortiz would know that I love that word. I went to medieval times when I was in middle school.
Yeah, I think that was the last time I went.
Yeah, and it was at this same one because we have one in the state. And yeah, that's the only one that you can go to. And it's just, it was so great. It was so much fun because everybody who was there was a nerd.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny. You either had like families with little kids who it clearly was like their birthday party too. Or you had like our age couples that were just geeking out and having a good time.
Yeah, it was. I didn't expect to see people our own age, because it was like 20 somethings, even though I'm not a 20 something anymore, like just there on date night, you know, like they're just there hanging out having fun. And I expected all third graders with their parents or their chaperones, but a knight threw you a rose.
That's right, that was pretty awesome. Yeah, I had always wanted that since I was a little girl, so dream came true.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was a dream that came true for you. And our knight won.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Which, you know, just makes it that much more enjoyable.
Oh, yeah, because you're rooting, like, that much harder for your knight.
The entire time. I mean, there was some poor schlubs whose knight, you know, went out in the first round.
Yeah, like a punk.
Like a punk. Like a loser. But not our knight. And, so anybody who is near a location of medieval times, go to it. Like, right now, I don't know if the special's still going on, but they have coupon day all the time. So like, like try to find a time to go and just have fun and let loose. Like everybody who's there is a nerd.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You have to just like be totally into it. Eat with your hands and
wear the little paper crown.
Yeah.
And you know, swing your banner and everything like
that's
that.
That's right.
I bought a chalice.
Yes, you did. Just so that you could say that you have a chalice.
I do. I have a chalice now. I when I meet new people, I say, hey, hello, my name is Tristan Riddell. I have a chalice.
I can just imagine, like, when we have people over the next time, you're just going to, like, randomly bring it out and not mention it at all. And they're going to be like, is that a chalice?
I'm going to be like, oh, this?
Oh, this? this thing with dragons on it?
Yes.
And gemstones? What?
Yes, this is my, James, I noticed you've been eyeballing my chalice. It's okay, you can ask me questions about it. It won't bite.
It sounds dirty.
With a great chalice comes great responsibility. Ever since I was a little boy, I wanted a chalice.
Well, you now have one.
Now I have, it's this weird
thing.
It
took you a long time.
I don't know what it is. Like, it's this weird thing where, I don't know. I think it's because of my mom. Like, I was so obsessed with medieval culture. You know, I loved knights and horses. Not even the fantastical portions of it. Like, not even the mystical stuff, like Lady of the Lake and dragons and everything like that. Really just the shields, the jousting, the chivalry. You know, everything about that. I was just so obsessed with that. And so, like, whenever I would see a movie and you'd see the king with this really long gray beard and he'd be eating a whole turkey leg. You know, just an entire turkey leg. And it was just so confusing to me. I was just like, I want an entire, like, none of this chopped up, you know, cut up bull crap. I want an entire turkey leg. And he would drink from the chalice, this gigantic chalice that reminded me of the fake Holy Grail in Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not the real one,
no,
the fake
no.
one.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, he'd take a drink from his chalice, and of course, he wouldn't be able to get all of the liquid into his mouth, and so it would drip down his gray beard, and then he would take his shirt and wipe it,
yep,
and then turn to his lady, who was way more attractive than him.
Yes.
That appealed to me for some reason.
Really?
That appealed to just me as that, a young man.
Okay, it seems kind of gross to me, but I definitely have that image in my head, even when you were talking about it. Yeah, I have it in my head. A little grossed out.
Little, that's fine. That's fine. It's not for everybody. It's not for everybody. Anyway, regardless, we wanted to let you guys know
because
so many of you asked us. We had a great time. And if you have any other questions for us, or if you just want to reach out to us, or if you have any show suggestions, it's been a while since we've gotten some show suggestions. That's hard to say. Show suggestions.
Yeah, it is.
You can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. You can also go to thenerdparty.com and go to the contact section. It's really easy to remember. And you can also find me on Twitter at @TheInsaneRobin. We really want to hear from you guys. We want to hear your suggestions.
What do you want to hear?
Yeah, what do you want us to talk about? You know, like today, what we're actually going to be talking about is books turned into movies, or like books versus movies, or however you want to play it. Because I read the other day that somewhere between 40% and 50% of all movies are based on novels.
That's larger than I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe not necessarily novels, but like written material.
Okay. That was, you know, published.
That was published. Previously. Yeah. Okay. Published written material, not written specifically for the screen.
Interesting.
I think that's amazing. Like you don't really think about it. You know, like obviously when you see The Great Gatsby or To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that. Like when you have these really wildly popular books that, you know, that we learn about in school, you know, like obviously we realize, oh yeah, no, that's based off of that great American novel.
Right.
But so many, like almost half of every movie that comes out is based off of a novel.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's really, it kind of brings up the question of, you know, when you see a movie you really like, and you realize after the fact that it's based off of a book, you're like, oh, should I read that book?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you read a book you love, and then you find out a movie's coming out, you're like, oh, maybe I should see that movie. There are some inherent dangers to that.
To both.
To both of them.
Yeah. So, okay, the English teacher in me to my class would say, okay, you need to read the book first and then watch the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I obviously do it in school, where like it's their reward is they get to watch the movie after we've read the book or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, as a person, just a viewer myself, I sometimes like watching a movie of something that I have not been interested in before, I didn't know about, and then read the book because I get more material. Whereas sometimes I'm very harsh with a movie if I have read the book first.
I relate to that on a very deep level. I think you're absolutely right. There's this, I think I've said this before on a previous podcast, a previous show, maybe on the Senate floor, but some people like don't agree with this logic. Like there's this almost snobbery to it.
Where I can see that.
If you like a book and they turn it into a movie, you automatically think it has to be worse than the book. Or you have to let people know that you were a fan of the book before the movie came out.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, you know, if I see a movie that's coming out and it's based off of a book I haven't read, I'm just like you in certain aspects where I'm like, oh, well, I'll see the movie first and then I'll read the book.
Right.
Because you have a 600-page novel.
Right.
And a 2-hour movie.
Right. Exactly.
And so if you watch the movie, be like, and you like it, you're like, hey, great, cool. And then you read the book, you're like, hey, this is all bonus material. Like, this is this is so storylines I had no idea existed. This is an enriching experience. But if you fall in love with the book to begin with, those 600 pages, and then you watch the 2-hour movie, most of the time all you're going to be thinking about is,
They didn't keep that.
Mm-hmm. Where's this character?
Yeah.
Where's this character? Why are they sleeping with that person? You know,
like, yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, going back to like what I do for, you know, every day when I teach, the book that comes to mind the most is Ender's Game.
Yes.
So for years, I was teaching Ender's Game, and there was no movie material to go along with it. And it was kind of nice, to be honest with you, because you know, as an English teacher, kids couldn't cheat and watch, you know, the movie. Because let's be honest, like, if there's a movie out there, there's going to be kids who find out that you're going to be teaching that, and they're going to go home and they're going to watch it. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I'm good. And, you know, I think that sometimes that works for some kids where, like, they can go back and do the bonus material, but some kids are just too lazy and they're not going to read it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So for a while, it was really awesome because I was like, yay, we can just read this. You have to read this. Otherwise, you're screwed. And then when the movie came out, I was super excited because I was like, oh, this is awesome. Then I'll be able to show this at the end. You know, it kind of is a reward and we can compare and contrast. That's awesome. But then when the movie came out with Harrison Ford and
Asa Butterfield,
something like that. Yeah. You can't. I kept complaining and I had a really hard time wrapping my head around that movie because if I had not read the book, so I mean, I basically have that book to memory because I've taught it so often. I probably would have appreciated the movie a little bit more, but because it takes place over time and like years span, I mean, years and years span in that novel, it's one of those things where when you put it into a 2-hour movie, it was basically like a few days' time, mm-hmm. like maybe a month or something.
It felt very quick.
It was very quick, and the characters were not very developed and, you know, came in at different times than they did in the book and everything like that. So when I tell my kids, oh, yeah, there's a movie, it'll screw you up if you watch that first because it's completely different. I mean, not completely, but
yeah.
So
that's really interesting that you bring that up because – Like as we go through the podcast, we're going to talk about different examples that we've kind of come across where we either love the book and watch the movie or watch the movie then read the book. With Ender's Game, my mom tried to get me to read this as a very young person because she thought I was reading too much Star Trek.
Here's some other science fiction
for
you.
Yeah, legitimately. This is legit what she did. Like, yeah. She bought the book and then put it on my bed. And so when I came home from school, I said, oh, cool, I have a gift. And it was Ender's Game. And I was like, whoa, this isn't Star Trek. What's the deal? And she said, yeah, you need to expand your horizons, Tristan. Stop reading so much Star Trek. You don't have to stop reading it all. Just expand your horizons. And I was like, no. And I put it on my shelf for years. And I didn't read it. And then you started teaching it. And I was like, okay, fine. So like this was like...
Yeah, and I told you need to read this
book.
This
was like 15 years later. And I read it. And I was... enraptured by it. I was like, holy crap, I am so sorry, Mom. This book is amazing. And it like you even categorized it as Ender as your favorite male protagonist.
Yeah, yeah.
In a novel.
Yeah, I really enjoy that character and the arc that he goes through. And yeah, it's very interesting. I don't get that from the movie.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to bring up is that when I, because I love the book too, but you know better than I do. But when we saw the movie, I thought they were almost too faithful to the story.
Really?
Yes. And here's my reasoning. Time-wise, no.
Okay.
They were not faithful time-wise at all. But I felt like almost every single chapter was in the movie. But the thing is, every single chapter was a condensed chapter, obviously, because it has to be. But I felt like they could have expanded on the more important areas if they cut some of the less important areas.
I get that.
And so because of that, you had this years-long story compacted into a 2-hour film when you could have cut it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I came from. And so I guess we're saying the same thing. The end result was the same thing, where the end result ultimately wasn't faithful to the feeling of the book. But I felt like that's because they were attempting to be too faithful to the story material.
That's interesting.
I could be way off base.
No, I get that. I get that. A book where I read it after was Gone Girl. So when we watched Gone Girl,
Fell in
love and I was like, oh, that's really cool. I want more. And then when I went and read the book, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm just getting bonus material.
Yeah.
The story's practically the same, but I get more detail and more inside their heads.
It is very much similar. Like,
yeah,
it's very similar. It is a very, Gone Girl is a very faithful adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And the feeling the verve, the writing, just the just. Well, I mean, it also helps because, you know, she wrote
the style of it.
Well, no, the same woman who wrote the book wrote the screenplay.
Right, right.
I love when that happens.
Yeah, I think that happened with Ender's Game too, though. I think he was involved. I don't think he necessarily wrote it, but I think he was heavily involved in the process.
He was labeled as a consulting producer.
Okay.
He was not as heavily involved as he was in previous projects that were trying to bring Ender's Game to fruition. And also, like, when the whole thing came out where they realized that Orson Scott Card, like, donated money to, like, anti-homosexual groups or something like that, then people tried to say, like, oh, boycott Ender's Game. And then the production company started distancing themselves from the author, saying, well, he wasn't really involved, you know, and everything like that. So who knows what's true?
Yeah.
But he definitely wasn't involved with writing the script.
Okay. Okay.
And who knows if he really was a consulting producer.
Okay.
But.
Gotcha.
We'll never know the truth.
Sure.
But with Gone Girl, Gillian Flynn, and I hate pronouncing her name that way.
You brought that up before.
Because it sounds like I'm screwing it up, but that's how she pronounces it. Gillian Flynn, Northwestern grad. I love it when people get to write screenplays for their own novels. And my favorite example of this is 25th Hour.
Mm.
That was, the novel was written by David Benioff, and he also wrote the screenplay. And some of you might recognize that name, because 25th Hour was his first movie, and he is now an executive producer and writer for Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Okay.
I like 25th Hour a whole lot more, and it's the only Spike Lee movie that I like, and it is definitely, like, if you guys not I, I people who I've met who have seen the film love the film.
I don't feel like a lot of people have.
But yeah, it's one of those films that kind of fly under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
People need to check it out. It's a story about a drug dealer. He is a drug dealer. Like, Edward Norton is a drug dealer. He gets caught, and he gets sentenced to 7 years in jail because of it. And so it's all about his last night as a free man.
Mm-hmm.
And him, you know, saying goodbye to his father, his girlfriend, and his friends. And they go out and party and everything like that. And it's an amazing story. Like, when I was in the theater, I had a literal physical reaction to a scene that I still haven't been able to explain. And so I have a connection to this film. But after I saw the movie and I was so taken by the story, and then I found out that it was based on a novel, I had to read it. And I read it cover to cover probably 3 times that summer.
That's cool.
And it
spoke to you at a time. Yeah.
Yeah. It came at the right time in my life. Yeah. It's, I don't want to say simplistic because there's a negative connotation to that, but he's a very direct writer.
Mm, okay.
And I think
that's interesting.
He's to the point. He's not overly flowery, but he's engaging.
Cool.
Yeah.
That kind of reminds me of another Edward Norton movie, Fight Club.
Oh, well, yeah. You got to talk about Fight Club.
Yeah, I was going to say. So I saw Fight Club, the movie, before I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I love both. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, Chuck Palahniuk is an awesome author.
And Fight Club was his first novel.
I mean, that's insane. That's crazy if you think about it.
That is crazy to be the...
And we've read a lot of his works.
Mm-hmm.
And we love him. And it's funny because I feel like it's very faithful to the tone and everything. But there are certain things in the movie that they change that I actually like more. Especially the ending scene.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the book, it's very odd because there's like this crowd.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't read the novel, we're going to spoil it for you because
it's been out for a long time.
It's been out for a long time. And so if you don't want to hear this, just skip ahead a couple of minutes. So at the end of the movie, they achieve their goal where they actually destroy all the credit card skyscrapers.
Yeah.
And everybody gets reset to zero. And he kills Tyler. The narrator kills Tyler. He's back up with Marla, and he basically becomes this ruler of this what you assume is like this head figure in the post-apocalyptic world, but a lot of it is left to your imagination of how it's going to go forward. In the novel, he doesn't achieve his goal. They don't blow up the credit card companies. It ends on the top of a roof, and all of the people from all of those support groups that I went to find him and stop him because they thought he was going to kill himself or something. And then he ends up in a mental institution in a hospital. And that's the end of the book. And you're like, holy crap. Like, it wasn't even a downer as in like, oh, that's depressing. It was a downer because it was, oh, that's anticlimactic.
Right, right. You kind of had this feeling at the end that you're like, ugh.
Yeah, it just, it left a sour taste in your mouth. And yeah, of course, it's more realistic this way. But you don't read Fight Club for realism.
Right. I mean, there's an agenda to it. And, yeah. You know, it's achieved in both.
Yeah.
But I feel...
And it's a great novel.
Right,
it's a great book,
right. Yeah. Absolutely. I just prefer the movie version more.
Ending, yeah.
Ending more, you know. Yeah.
And also how Tyler and the narrator meet.
Oh, yeah.
Is different.
Yeah.
Like it's a...
They meet on like a nude beach.
Yeah, they meet on a nude beach.
Instead of in a plane.
Which is so
yeah,
odd.
It's very odd. Yeah, it's interesting. But I mean, I liked watching the movie first and then getting more detail as I, you know, went through and read the novel. There's a lot like that. Can you think of any that you read the book first? Because I can think of one.
I'm sure. I mean, I like there's.
I'm going to bring up Hunger Games.
Oh,
and I know
it's
a little cliche, I know, because everyone loves Hunger Games and, you know, stuff
I was
like
wondering
that.
When we were going to get to the Hunger Games portion of this conversation.
Well, okay. So when they first came out, the books, I was all about them. Mm-hmm. And I read them all. The first one was definitely my favorite. And I think there's something about first person perspective books that's very hard to translate into film.
Yes.
Because even though you can, I feel like you lose something in the thought process of the character that you're following. Mm-hmm. So I am not a big fan of the Hunger Games movies, but I really enjoyed the books, although the first book was definitely my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I think because of, you know, it was something more unique at that time.
Yes.
And I liked being inside of her head, whereas when it went to the movie version, we lost all of that because I couldn't be inside her head. And obviously that doesn't translate. It doesn't work. But I do feel like sometimes I miss that when I've read the book first or whatnot.
Yeah, with Hunger Games, this was a lot of fun because you read the book. Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Right.
And... I think you even saw the movie before me. I think you saw it with your mom, didn't you?
It's possible.
And yeah, like I was after you saw the movie, I was talking about you were talking. Oh, okay, I remember now. You read the book, mm-hmm. loved it, saw the movie with your mom in the theater, and then I didn't see it until we rented it.
Okay.
But I read the book in between when you saw the movie and when I saw the movie.
Okay.
So I did read the book before I saw the movie, but not before you. And I started describing what I didn't like about the book. And I said, I was like, you know what? Like, I like that it was in her head, but, you know, I really wanted to see the game masters at work. You know, like I wanted to see them behind the scenes in their control room. And also at the end with all those dogs, like they were like had the faces of the people they killed. I was like, that was unnecessary. And I basically described everything that was different
from the novel.
From
yeah.
the novel to the
yeah,
book.
Yeah.
Like what they included in the book but wasn't in the novel. And
right.
you were just like, ugh, you're gonna like the movie.
It's true. And you did. You liked it more than me.
I did. I liked the first one more than you, but that's where it ended.
Yeah.
Because the sequel books.
They're not as great, I don't feel.
Yeah, I like them, but there was nowhere near as good as the first one. But the movies, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, they're hard to get through, in my opinion.
No, I think they're very hard. I think the first one's very watchable, and you can enjoy it. But then it just gets progressively worse after that. And then the last one's almost unwatchable.
I feel like it's because they tried too hard to, because they were such beloved books at that time, I feel like it might be because they tried too hard to stick to that adaptation.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's possible. I was a victim of that.
Yeah. I think it was just money grabbing for the last book to be split into two. Because I understand it with... like with Harry Potter, when they mm-hmm. split that up, it was a lot of story to tell. Now, I personally hate Deathly Hallows Part 1, but I understand that it's a lot of story that you
right.
have to get through. And with Hunger Games, you didn't have that much story to get through.
Right.
They stretched it.
You could have condensed it, I feel.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that like say you have they maybe had enough material for a movie and a quarter, mm-hmm. and they stretched it to two movies. Mm-hmm.
You said that they did a really good job. I actually, I'm like a weirdo that never read Harry Potter, but you said that they did a really good job on the screenplay of Harry Potter.
I can say for at least the first one, because I only read the first three.
Okay.
But the first Harry Potter, the Sorcerer's Stone, and I almost said Philosopher's Stone. I'm not trying to be a hipster by calling it Philosopher's Stone. I promise you. It's just it's stuck in my brain. I have no idea why. But Sorcerer's Stone, it was amazing. Like, the adaptation was amazing because J.K. Rowling pushes in so much material in those pages. But it's not like Tolkien. It's not mm-hmm. like Herbert, where... If you feel like it's over-analysis or over-explaining or overly technical, she just puts so much of the world into every single thing that they do. It's so enriched that, you know, you're just like, how are you going to make this into a movie? Now, I watched the movie and then I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
But as, like, you know, I love the first one. I don't care what people say. I think it's great. I love the first movie. But then when I read the book, I appreciated the movie even more because the way that the screenwriter organized it was genius. I mean, he reorganized scenes, he cut out certain things, moved characters around, and he did that to keep it within the 2-hour framework or 2.5-hour framework, but yet it still felt faithful. The tone was exactly the same, even though mass amounts of things were cut. Now, I'm sure that there's diehard fans out there who are screaming at me saying, no, it's BS. Like, you need to have every single page on the screen. Well, that's not realistic. And, like, a lesser writer would have just taken out bits and pieces and condensed. This person reorganized, reworked, retooled. And I'm not saying it made it better, but it was the best adaptation, I think, that it could have been. On screen.
I get that. Yeah. I definitely feel like I'm more of that person when I do read the book first. I am that, you know.
Yes, you are.
Crying, angry person who's like, you messed it up. You didn't, you know, you weren't faithful to this book. That's why sometimes I really do like watching the movie first and then being interested to read the book mm-hmm. because I feel like then I can calm down and just enjoy the movie for what it is and then have this bonus material. Whereas if I read it first, I immediately have images in my head. I have an idea of what I want to see on screen. And then, you know, I'm kind of done for.
Well, that's one thing that really bothered you with Hunger Games is that because you loved it so much and you felt like you could visualize this world, that no world that any filmmaker could create would compete with it.
Right.
And also you had an image in your head of what Katniss would look like.
Right.
And then it's not Jennifer Lawrence.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
And that can be frustrating for people. And I get it. I understand it. Like, if you can't get past that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand.
And I really wish that I wasn't like that, but I admit that I am like that when I'm obsessed with a piece of literature that then becomes a movie.
I think I'm much more forgiving than you are.
I think so.
Now, I'm not saying, I'm not judging you, but I'm just saying
No, go ahead.
I think I can compartmentalize where I'm just like, this is the book experience.
Mm-hmm.
This is the movie experience. And one situation where I couldn't move beyond that is actually one of my favorite novels of all time. I've actually talked about it on the show before, but I didn't actually give out the title. And it's The Hot Estate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This novel is written by Ethan Hawke. Now, some of you are probably rolling your eyes or scoffing, saying, Ethan Hawke, really? I go, yes, shut up. I love this book. It's my favorite book of all time. I like it more
really,
than Dune.
Really, still?
Yeah.
Really?
Still, yeah. And it's it got me at the right time.
Okay.
I was a young person when I read it. I was a teenager when I read it. And it was about a 20-year-old trying to make it as an actor in New York. Now, I'm not saying I can relate to that because I wasn't trying to do that. But if you've ever wanted to know what it's like to be in the brain of a young man, read The Hot Estate. I've never seen a novel encapsulate these feelings that I couldn't articulate before. Or like these urges, I don't want to use primal because that's overused and prosaic, but like these just these things that are so uniquely me and uniquely male, it's in his writing, and you can hear his voice. You can hear Ethan Hawke's voice as you read it. But anyway, I loved it. Like, I have a copy that's highlighted. It has, you know, notes in the side. The cover's all bent up because I've read it so many times, and I'll continue to read it again.
It's I remember when we were dating, you would read me chapters out loud.
I would. I read it out loud to you.
Wooing me.
I was the pretentious guy who was like, baby,
let me read to you.
Listen to this passage, okay? Look at how he utilizes the adverb. You know, it's just like,
you had me.
Yeah, I knew my audience. But with, like, yeah, like, that's how connected I was to it. And then I find out that years later, they made it into a movie. And it's directed by Ethan Hawke.
You're super excited about it.
I'm like, oh, wow, holy crap. Okay, great. You know, it's just like the Gillian Flynn thing. You know, she wrote the book.
Right.
And she wrote the screenplay. It's got to be great. It's got to be faithful. Well, even though it was Ethan Hawke's book, he and I both had very different interpretations of this story.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even finish it.
No.
I couldn't finish
the
movie.
I think you purposely turned it off because you were like, this is going to ruin the book for me. Because let's be honest, once you have new images in your head, it's hard to get them out.
Yeah.
When you already have established that world or those characters in your own mind through your imagination, it is really hard. So I know that was really hard for you. It was like a traumatic time.
It was. Like, I was...
You felt betrayed.
I was betrayed by the author.
Yeah.
And that's what really killed me. And
you're such a big Ethan Hawke fan.
I am such a big Ethan Hawke fan.
Yeah, yeah.
I still am. And I just, you're right, it was traumatic. Like, that was the first and I think only traumatic experience where I had where I felt like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing this to me, Tristan Rattel? Did you do this purposefully to hurt me, Ethan? No, Ethan, no.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like sometimes when you read something, it's almost like, okay, what's in my head is better.
Mm-hmm.
I can create this world that is better than what you can put on screen. And I think some books shouldn't be made into movies because of that reason.
Yeah, it's funny because the Cloud Atlas was described as a book that could never be made into a movie.
I could see that.
And then the Wachowski brothers attempted... but proved the critics right because it was a god-awful movie. It was so god-awful that it kind of makes me want to read the book.
Really?
Yeah. I want
to see if it's a really good book that just failed miserably on the screen.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Because that's how some people got really into Dune.
Oh, really?
Because they hated the David Lynch interpretation so much that they're like, we got to go to the source material and find out what went wrong. And then they read the novel and they're like, oh, wow, this is transcendent. And
interesting.
Then they're fans.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Did I ever make you watch Cloud Atlas to say like, hey, look at this train wreck? Or
yeah, I saw most of it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You came in. Like, I was watching it and you came in from home.
Mm-hmm.
From home, from work.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw quite a bit of it. Enough to know.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Hanks couldn't even save that movie. And that's saying something.
I was going to say. Yeah. No, I feel like sometimes books, like you said, if it takes place in, you know, different times and different worlds, sometimes even though, you know, movie does a pretty good job of doing that most of the time, sometimes you kind of just want to leave it where it is.
Yeah.
Like, let that just be a part of... literature
that,
and
let that be a book.
Just yeah,
let that be on paper, and then only there. That's kind of how I feel about certain remakes.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, like I was just talking about this with Matt Hansen, Jaws.
Why would you remake that?
Exactly. Like whenever a remake conversation happens and people say like, oh, list name a movie that should never be remade. I think of two films. I think of Godfather and Jaws.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, like.
And some older ones, too. And I think they're going to remake Chariot Race.
Ben-Hur.
Are you kidding me? It's Ben-Hur.
They're remaking Ben-Hur.
That's now, it's like a sin.
Now, I understand that, like, just like the Ten Commandments, Ben-Hur is itself a remake. But once you have perfected it, there's no need to go back.
It's so iconic.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing is that, like, people will claim, like, will say, like, oh, well, you know, like, Ten Commandments is a remake. And I was like, okay, name one thing that, like, that you liked about the first Ten Commandments. Oh, that's right. You've never seen it.
That's sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
But usually it's because of those actors. You know, it's like you can't replace those actors playing those roles too.
Oh, that's
I mean, think about like Marlon Brando and your Chuck Hestons. Like you can't replace those people.
No. No, you can't.
No one's going to do a better job and you're constantly going to be comparing it. Right. So what's the point?
I think the only time that you can let that slide is how do I phrase this? Like Streetcar Named Desire.
Okay.
All right. So that's was a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made it into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And but we've enjoyed the movie,
mm-hmm.
but we also enjoy seeing the stage play.
True.
But would we enjoy seeing that movie remade?
I separate those though a little bit.
Like I
when
do
I
too.
When I see a stage play of a famous work that also has been made into a movie, but it's usually obviously the play is first.
Yes.
And almost, you know, probably 95% of the chance it's going to be a play first. I separate it because I'm like, I'm seeing a theatrical experience
mm-hmm.
versus a movie. But even then, I mean, you think about, you know, Marlon Brando screaming Stella. You're, yeah. you know, you get put it in someone else and you're like, they're just saying his lines.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. It's that has that effect where this new actor is just like, oh, you're just saying their lines. You know, I feel like there are certain times when I can forgive it if they go back to the source material. Like if you have an iconic movie that's based off of a book and then they remake it, but then they try to stress, listen, this is not a remake of the film. This is us just doing our own interpretation of the source material.
Okay, so they're going to the original source material.
Yes.
I can see that.
Yes, and I'm trying to think of some examples, but the only thing that's coming to mind is Planet of the Apes.
Really?
Well, I know. I'm blanking on another example, but yeah, like when Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes came out, they kept trying to stress this is not a remake. We're not remaking the Chuck Heston film. This is our own reimagining of it, even though it was nothing like the novel.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a bad example because I was trying to think of something good.
Well, I can think of something, but it's kind of hated that we like it more. Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, they went to the source material.
Yes.
And they were so pure to it with the Swedish version. I think that that's why everyone loves it so much, because it's so pure to mm-hmm. the novel. But then David Fincher goes, you know, to the source material and changes some things,
mm-hmm.
which I preferred a lot of those changes. We read the book, and I'm like, yeah, I kind of like those changes better. Like, that was kind of unnecessary. I think that's a lot tighter story
mm-hmm.
by taking out those incidents.
Yeah, actually, I was just having a conversation about... I feel like I'm always talking...
I was going to say, you're always defending it.
I'm always defending this interpretation. John Mills from Aggressive Negotiations on the Network, a Star Wars podcast that he hosts with Matt Rushing, which everyone should check out. He mentioned online... that he said, he's like, the insane Robin freaked out like Ash at the end of Alien when I told him that I thought Girl with a Dragon Tattoo was just mediocre. Which is true, because I started spinning around, I spat up milk, and I tried to shove a magazine in his mouth when he told me it. But he started talking about it on Twitter, and other people started chiming in.
Really?
Like, one guy's like, well, are you talking about...
Of course.
...the Fincher film?
Of course.
Or are you talking about the original Swedish film? And I think John said that he liked the Swedish film, but he didn't like the Fincher film, but John didn't do it in a pretentious way.
Okay.
Because he said that he also read the novel and that he loved the novel. Okay. And that was news to me, because I thought he was just bashing the movie to be bashing the movie. And he had no basis for comparison, but I prematurely judged John. And
well, you shouldn't do that.
I shouldn't do that. But this other guy was just like, oh yeah, no, Girl with Dragon Tattoo was mediocre. But then all these other people started chiming in. All of my Fincher buddies saw it, and like the bat signal was
Fincher
in the sky.
Fincher attack!
Yeah, like Fincher's outline was in the bat signal with him taking off his glasses and screaming at a poor PA. That's what his bat signal is.
Awesome.
And then all these people started chiming in and saying, oh no, it's brilliant. It's sublime.
That's hilarious.
You know, like, you don't even, it's 1,000 times better than the Swedish version. Yeah.
Well, I respect, I respect if you've, I know it's, that sounds a little pretentious, but I respect if you've read the novel and you've seen both and then you still like the Swedish version more.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, cool.
That's your cup of tea.
That's what you, how you interpret it, and that's totally fine. Go for it. But if you were just like, well, it's because it's the first, mm-hmm. that's when I'm like, really? Like, be open to that.
That's when I say to you, like, but, take off your hipster glasses.
Yeah.
Just because it's foreign doesn't mean it's better.
But I have to kind of analyze that and be like, are they seeing it the same way we see, like, a Ben-Hur? Do they see it as, like, okay, well, this came first and this is iconic? Think about that.
Here's my main difference.
Okay.
Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Swedish version, came out in 2009.
Okay.
Century's version came out in 2011.
So wasn't Ben that...
Hur came out in the 50s.
I gotcha. Okay. But I kind of feel like when we talk to people, that's how they see it. They're like, this is the version. Mm. You don't want to like admit it.
No, I don't.
Okay, we can move on.
I don't want to give them any leeway. Like John had, like, John wasn't pretentious about it. He said, he's like, I read the book and I liked the Swedish interpretation more. And Fincher's just felt, you know, like, Fincher's not for everybody.
No, it's not.
I get that. I get that completely. Like, if you have a reason why you didn't like it, then there you go. That's fine. I'm not going to argue with you about your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just go, oh, the original's better because it's the original and blah, 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 blah.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Swedish version, you're kind of left more of like a, kind of more of a hopeful feeling.
A little bit, because they...
She's, like, on a beach, and...
Do they end on the beach? Yeah, they end on the beach.
Yeah, and then when you go to the Fincher version, like, her heart's been crushed. Like, she's just now, like, completely desensitized to love, and basically, that's how you view it.
He Fincherized it.
Right, exactly. It's a gut punch.
He removed the joy from the scenario.
So, I mean, it's one of those things where I get it, yeah. Can you think of another one?
Another one, what?
Just book that you maybe enjoyed more, or maybe the movie more.
I should have had a list. I should have prepared.
Well, no,
more.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I was thinking about To Kill a Mockingbird to go back to old school.
Oh yeah. We should talk about that. We should talk old school, because it's To Kill a Mockingbird is heralded as one of the greatest books of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's something that every middle schooler is legally obligated to read. And but we're okay with it because it's such an amazing book. And then the movie came out soon after.
Yeah.
And the movie was heralded as one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yeah.
And are we talking about, like, remakes, or are we just talking about, like, I guess we shouldn't be talking about remakes. We should talk about adaptations. Yeah. I feel like that was a very early example of how you can be incredibly faithful but still cut out storylines.
Mm-hmm.
To Kill a Mockingbird is a great example of how you do not need to have every single page on the screen.
That's how I feel. Absolutely. I think it's incredibly faithful but still keeping the movie medium in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just, like we've said, there's just no way to fit all of it in a movie, but I think it's incredibly faithful. I like that example just because of that.
You know, one thing that we should talk about is, this isn't exactly books turned into movies, but I feel like we as a society have adapted this as text, where we see it in, I think the majority of Americans see it on page, except in when they should be seeing it on stage, and that's Shakespeare.
Mm. Interesting.
We see them as books. Like, kids see them as books.
See them as plays.
Well, yes.
Right.
As you should.
Right.
You're a drama director. Of course you're going to see it as a play. I see it as a play.
Okay.
I always had teachers who stressed to us, Shakespeare is meant to be seen.
Yes.
Not necessarily read.
Yes.
But I feel like the majority of America sees it as books. Like, you go like, oh, do you like Hamlet? Oh, yeah, that's a great book.
Not really.
It's a stage play. Have you seen it? You know, that kind of thing. And we're not trying to be pretentious here. This is just how it is. So I guess that's why I'm kind of in this gray area. Like, should we talk about it? Should we not? Because, you know, with Shakespeare, I feel like you have more of an obligation to be faithful to the text. Because it's the bard, man.
Yeah, that's interesting to bring up. Because so many people, you know, either on stage or in movie form will kind of adapt it to either modern times. Mm-hmm. Like we just went and saw Othello at Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier. Mm-hmm. And it was all like militaristic.
Like Desert Storm.
Yeah, Desert Storm era type feel to it, which was really cool. But they don't change the words.
They don't change the language.
Yeah, they do not change the language at all. It's Shakespeare.
Because then it's not Shakespeare.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that Shakespeare kind of lends itself to that. Because, I mean, you've got iambic pentameter. You can't change. I mean, if you do, it just sounds stupid.
Then you get the movie Oh.
Exactly.
With Josh Hartnett and Julia Stiles. And Omar Epps.
Yeah, I tend to like the more true interpretations of Shakespeare.
Yeah, I traditional. Yeah, yeah. I like, but
I was gonna say we both love Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I mean you have Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, which is crazy town.
Yeah,
and a lot of people can't handle it because it's so off the wall.
Is my students cannot handle it?
That is so surprising to me.
Yeah, I think it's a generational thing because it was so cool for our generation.
Popular.
And I mean, we had the soundtrack. You know, it was like, it was so popular. It was like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. But like,
Leo at the height of his heart, his teen heartthrobness.
Exactly. But when I show it in class, they're just like, what is happening to me? It's hilarious. Of course, I kind of like how Baz Luhrmann like throws, you know, old time pieces of literature like Great Gatsby and in Shakespeare and like puts it on their head. So I like that.
Yeah, that is kind of fun. Like I remember seeing a trailer for Great Gatsby and I'm like, I don't remember reading that.
That's a different book than I read.
I wonder, I need to get Baz Luhrmann's copy.
Sounds like a better party.
But with Hamlet, though. You have the, like, bringing up Ethan Hawke again.
Mm-hmm.
I love Ethan Hawke's version of Hamlet. It's a modern interpretation. Language is the same, but it's cut up like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's cut up, jumbled around. It has very an artsy feel to it, very avant-garde feel to it in certain times. And Kyle MacLachlan, you know, is in it.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray is in it. Liev Schreiber, Julia Stiles again.
I was
going
to say Julia Stiles.
I love it. It's great. But it's not as crazy as Julie Taymor did with Titus.
Yeah.
Titus Andronicus.
That's a messed up movie.
That is a very messed up film. Very.
Well, it's a messed up play, let's be honest.
It was his most popular play.
It was.
A lot of people don't realize that Titus Andronicus was his most popular play
people
at the
time.
People
love the gore. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a gory, messed up movie.
It is a very messed up. We have
or Shakespearean play.
We have a quote from Titus Andronicus on our quote board, and it's the quote from the Moor, and like one of the sons is arguing with him about his mother, and the Moor goes, "Villain, I have done thy mother."
I love it.
You're like, wait, is he talking about screwing the Queen of the Goths? Is that what he's doing? I think that's what he's talking about.
Oh, what is there to laugh about Titus? There's nothing. I'm sorry.
I guess that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, he turns the boys into meat pies. Very
that's
Sweeney
right.
Todd.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Or I should
it's
say, awesome. Sweeney Todd is very Titus.
Very whimsical.
But yeah, so like I think it's funny because Shakespeare, it's great for traditional adaptations. Like you have Kenneth Branagh's, which is word for word Hamlet. Yeah. But it's a different.
I think that's my favorite Hamlet.
Oh, but hands down, that's my favorite Hamlet too. But it's the wrong time period.
I know.
Mel Gibson's is the right time period, but he doesn't do it word for word.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have it cut it up. You can have shortened or abridged versions. You can have faithful versions. You can have alternate translations, like with Ethan Hawke's Hamlet and Julie Taymor's Titus Andronicus. But it only remains Shakespeare if you keep the language.
Yeah.
Like you said.
It's true. Like, it doesn't really matter what time period you throw it into. Mm-hmm. It's kind of up to interpretation or, you know, what you want as a filmmaker or director.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that wording has to stay the same. Yeah. Shakespeare has to stay the same.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end.
Yeah.
I mean,
the bard.
End with the bard. You know, you got to. There's nothing better than that.
That's right.
Well, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. And please remember to subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you can find podcasts, you can find us. Just search Nerd Nuptial. Make sure to check out some of our other shows. Check out Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast. Make sure to check out The Senate Floor and also the spinoff show, Filibuster. And you'll have a good time. And also, we would really appreciate it if you took the time to write us a review. We are so close to 100 ratings. I just want that. I want that number.
I know.
We only need six more, folks.
Yeah.
We only need six more ratings. So please, if you like this show, if you haven't already, please take the time.
Help us get to that number.
Help us reach 100. And if you give us a 5-star rating and a review, we will mention you on the show. And we love talking about our listeners on the show. And if you do that and you're outside of the country, take a screenshot of it and email it to us at contact@thenerdparty.com. And something else that I'm going to tell you about, and because it's just going to be a secret between you and me. In our audience. If you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter in the code nerdparty, you're going to save money on something that you're already saving money on. And that is a subscription service to a geek box that's delivered to your door every single month. It's got Pop Funkos, t-shirts, action figures, comic books. We're talking licensed memorabilia where you're getting $40 plus worth of material for $20. And if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter in the code nerdparty, you'll save some money even more off of that. You know what? I really just have one other thing to say to you, and that's that I love you.
I know.
You can't see me being a father?
No. Well, I can see you fathering children. I can see you raising it.
I would raise my own chalupas.
Well, we're definitely not having any kids together if you're going to be calling them chalupas.
It's probably your mother.
You have the worst timing ever.
Montgomery broken in? I'm Agent Flood with the Drug Enforcement Administration.
So strange, Pop. The only people I trust are you and guys I grew up with.
What do we say to him?
We'll say nothing. He's going to hell for 7 years. What am I going to do? Wish him luck?
Champagne for my real friends and real pain for my sham friends.
Can't believe you brought my student in here.
I mean, you haven't done anything wrong yet.
What do you mean yet?
She's the only girl I've ever kept fantasizing about after I slept with her. Is that normal?
That's a pretty good kind of normal.
We haven't talked about this at all. You know, this is our last night.
No, it's not our last night. My last night.
I watched him ruin his life. The last 10 years, I've been watching him get deeper and deeper.
I look at these people around me, and I'm thinking, these are my friends? Dude, I don't even know these people.
He doesn't trust me.
What reason does he have not to trust you?
I got one idea, but I need a big favor from you.
He runs, he's gone. He ain't coming home. If he pulls the trigger, they close the casket. They lock him away, he's gone. You'll never see him again.
Stay with me.
No, I gotta do one more little thing.
I wanna hold you, but my hands are tied.
Years from now, you gather your family together, you tell them the whole story. Who you are, where you come from. And then you ask them if they know how lucky they are to be there.
This will be the best night of my life. Best night of my life.